Today, we're going to be talking about growing your small business.
I'm David C. Barnett, and you're tuned in to Small Business and Dealmaking, the podcast, YouTube channel, and blog, where I talk about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses while controlling risk. So if you're looking to take control of your future through buying a business one day, or if you already own a business and you're looking to grow or exit, you've come to the right place. I talk about interesting things, I talk to interesting people, and I answer your questions every week right here. So be sure to hit like and be sure to hit subscribe, and let's get to it. Are you thinking of growing your business or beginning a journey into entrepreneurship? Take a shortcut to success by buying an existing and profitable business the right way. Visit businessbuyeradvantage.com and learn more about my online training, group coaching, and consulting services designed to help you win.
Hey, today I wanted to talk about growing your business. And it actually came out of a comment about the costs of growth. I wanted to expand it a little bit more to just kind of talk about growth in general. And one of the sort of the methodologies or the way that I like to think about approaching challenges like growing a business, because 9 times out of 10, when I talk with people about growing their business, they seem to want to focus on the hardest thing first, which for most small businesses would be getting more customers, right? And so you think about the challenge of getting a customer. You have to go out into the marketplace, meet someone who needs or wants your product or service, who presumably is getting it from someone else already, and convince them to leave that supplier and come over and do business with you. And so you've got this big hurdle there, right? And a lot of the times people will, they'll fall upon, you know, promotions, sales, coupons, et cetera, to try to entice someone to come over and try your product or service. And so then you end up, you know, earning less money while you serve that customer, and you're expending all these resources, marketing, advertising, et cetera, to try to get that person. In the case of like a bigger sort of business to business kind of environment, adding more customers might entail hiring another salesperson, right? So it could be a significant investment in money that has to be made in order to create the sales capacity to go out and find more of these customers. So let's think about this from the point of view of what the end goal is, because usually when we think about growing a business, the end goal is to make more money often, right? And so instead of trying to find more customers, this is just an idea. Instead of trying to find more customers, maybe the first step can be trying to figure out how to lose fewer, right? Because it's easier to keep a customer you already have than it is to do the work of finding someone who isn't your customer and getting them to come over. So a strategy for lowering customer attrition or churn would probably be the number one step in increasing sales. The other thing would be becoming more cost effective. So for example, if your net income, if your profit is 20%, let's say, and you figured out a way to save $100 in your business, that would be the same as selling $500 more in top line revenue, right? And so you can go through an exercise of, again, if the goal is increasing profitability, we need to make sure we're being cost efficient. And over the years, I've heard all kinds of crazy things from people who went through an exercise of actually digging into what spending was happening and in company credit cards and stuff like that. You know, things like paying for premium LinkedIn subscriptions for people that were no longer part of the team. Just stuff that should have been canceled a long time ago that they continue to pay for. And so you want to look at, make sure that you're cost effective, that you're not wasting money in places that you don't need to waste money. Now, we talked about growing your number of customers, finding new customers, but there's other ways that people often look at growth for a business as well. So they're, you know, number one, just increasing prices. And I made a video a couple of weeks ago about increasing your prices and how important it is. But then there's also offering different lines of product or service. There's entering new markets. There's a bunch of other different ways that we can look at growth. And each one of them has its own advantages, disadvantages, and costs that are going to come with it. So for example, if you are a retail store and you want to grow into a new market, that might mean setting up another retail store. So it's got all kinds of commitments that are going to come along with entering that new market. So the next sort of question that we have is, what is it going to take to grow? And are these things that have to be committed to, or are they things that can be backed out of? So I'll give you an example. If you want to grow to a new market, say another country, another city, another state, and you can serve that new market from your existing place of business, then maybe what you need is you need like a salesperson in that new market, for example. Well, a salesperson can be hired and you pay them based on time, right? Every 2 weeks you run payroll, you pay that person. So you could have that person, you know, calling on prospective customers in that new market. They can, you know, meet people, they can make presentations, et cetera. They can try to make sales. And every time they make a sale, you then ship to the customer, right? So if it turns out that this strategy is not viable, if the added transportation costs, for example, mean that you can't be price competitive, or if it turns out that the established competitors in that market are really firmly entrenched and you're just having a really hard time dislodging them and getting customers to come over to your side, well, you can end the employment of that salesperson relatively easily, right? Now, there's going to be different employment standards with respect to severance and all that kind of stuff, but you may have bought them a computer and you've paid their salary for a few months. You've tried the strategy, and if it doesn't work, you can kind of undo it. If you compare that with opening a retail store in another city, maybe you had to sign a multi-year lease. Maybe you had to invest a significant amount of money in inventory for that store. There could be a much higher hurdle that has to be jumped as far as money put down to invest than just, you know, some other alternative. So I always ask the question, what's it going to cost in order to do this growth? And are there any alternatives? Is there another way around it? So that leads to the question about capacity, right? So do you have the ability to actually serve more people? Will you need to add labor? Will you need to add machinery? Will you have to make investments in more components and more inventory? Will you have to have a higher work in progress? What is your cash conversion cycle? Do you offer people like 30 days to pay? And so if you increase your sales dramatically, are you going to have to put out money for labor, materials, work in progress, et cetera, before you start to then collect money from these added sales that you're going to make? Most people don't think about the fact that if you grow sales and you offer your customers terms, you are going to have to actually invest in accounts receivable. Your AR is going to grow on your balance sheet. And if you've got bills that have to be paid more immediately, like labor, you know, employees want to be paid weekly or every second week, then you're going to have to find the money to pay the labor before those increased sales actually come back to you in the form of checks from your customers paying their bills. There's the whole question of organic versus inorganic growth. So on this channel, we talk about small business and we talk about buying and selling businesses. So inorganic growth would be the acquisition. So in the example I gave earlier about growing to a new market, if you are going to set up another location and all of the burdens that come with that, you know, signing a lease, inventory, et cetera, you can pretty quickly see the advantages of buying a similar business in that new market versus opening up your own greenfield location, because you will already know for certain that the bills are going to be paid in that new location because they're being paid today, right? And so this is why someone might choose to do an inorganic or acquisition expansion to get into a new market, because it just de-risks the whole thing, right? You don't end up worrying that you've signed a five-year lease and the business will never be able to make any money and it'll just become a net drain on your mothership location, you know, where you're from. Organic growth, obviously, has the perception of being cheaper. Because you think, well, I don't have to write this big check. I don't have to take on this big burdensome debt. I can just incrementally grow. So the question then is, you know, is there a way to kind of marry the best of both worlds? Could I figure out a way to get new customers without taking on risks or committing myself to big investments or debts? And so there's another whole way to grow a company called strategic partnerships. So if you can identify another business that already does business with people who could ideally be your customers, right? you could go to that other business and you can say, look, I'm looking to grow my clientele. You serve people that, and we're not competitors, but you serve people that are usually the kind of people that are my customers. Maybe we can make some kind of arrangement where if you lead some of these people to become my customer, or if you become a sales agent of mine, or if we learn to work together to expand my business, then there's something in it for you, right? And so it's a way of trying to be synergistic. And there are all kinds of examples of this happening. Sometimes you might get an offer from like your credit card company promoting, you know, save extra if you go to this particular store. That's an example of a joint venture. Another example of a joint venture that I saw just the other day, I went to a local microbrewery and on the tables, they had QR codes for placing orders at a local pizzeria, right? So that pizzeria is trying to sell more pizza and they're coming over to deliver it to the microbrewery, which doesn't sell food. Now, I don't know what the arrangement is between the two companies, but that's an example of a strategic joint venture. The microbrewery knows that people may want to have food and they're helping the local pizzeria sell more pizza. There's probably some kind of compensation in, you know, behind that deal. And maybe it's just, you know, some in-kind services, right? Some pizzas being delivered for free or something to the staff party. I don't know. But get your mind thinking about this. Think, what would it take? What would the investment be for me to be able to have this growth that I want to achieve? Now, is there a creative, resourceful way for me to achieve the same results without making the investment? Now, let's say there is no other way to achieve the growth without making the investment. How then should you start thinking about these investments? Well, I think you need to think about it within the context of the risk of small and medium-sized businesses. So we talk a lot about how businesses are valued, right? And how small businesses sell for a relatively low multiple of cash flow because of the risks associated with them. So does it not then make sense that you should be looking at investments within your own business within the lens that a buyer might look at your business for a potential acquisition? So if you have a very small business, you know, businesses typically trade for like 2.5 times seller's discretionary earnings. If you convert that to a percentage, you're talking about a 40% ROI, which means that if you're going to invest $100,000 in some kind of growth strategy, you have to be pretty certain that the growth strategy is going to net out a $40,000 additional profit for your business. So that if a buyer came along, let's say something happened and you wanted to sell your business in 2 years' time, that investment becomes justified by the fact that your cash flow has increased and the buyer is now willing to pay a higher price for your business because of that investment, because the value of the investment has been recognized in the cash flow, right? And so this is a great lens to put on when you're looking at these investments. And I find that so many small business people don't take this approach. Because they don't really look at their own reinvestment in the business through the same kind of lens that people look at the acquisition of a business. And really, it's the same thing. Because if you don't take the $100,000 and invest it in growing your business, you could use that $100,000 to go buy another business, right? So, you know, in the world of finance, it's all about asset allocation. Where am I going to put this capital for the best yield, the best return on investment? And so by understanding the kind of return that you need to get out of investing in your own business, it's going to help you make better decisions instead of just chasing sales. So, you know, the trap that a lot of business people will fall into is they'll say, I want to grow my business. I want to have more. They'll just start chasing more sales. They don't really think about all the other back end stuff that has to go into the delivery to the new customers or what it's going to take to keep the customers or even if it will be worthwhile to do. So, great example of this would be if you have a business and you grow to the point where you now have to start adding middle management elements. So, let's say the owner of the business directly supervises a couple of teams of employees that do work for the customers. And now you've grown, so there's so many teams of employees, you need someone else to come and join to become a supervisor. This is often described like a staircase, right? So we're going to grow. Then we have to add that supervisor, and that supervisor is going to cost us $80,000 or $100,000 a year. And now, all of the increased profit that we've just had through the growth is lost to this new person's salary. And then furthermore, we need to keep growing at the same rate, for another year to kind of make up that supervisor's salary before we become net positive again. And these are the growing pains that a lot of businesses will go through. And so you're either going to make the commitment to a long-term growth strategy that is going to allow you to grow this bigger and bigger and bigger business. And there's people out there who do this. Or you're going to hit the pause button and you're going to say, wait a minute, I can, invest more and more money into this growth strategy, which contains unknowns. We never know what the future holds, but I've got to be committed to this for a long period of time in order to make sure that I will one day see or have a good chance of seeing the fruits of these investment efforts. Or I'm just going to stay at my current size and just focus on keeping the customers I have, making sure I'm cost effective, making sure I'm not wasting money anywhere. I'm going to maximize profit without growth, and I'm going to take profits out of the business maybe and put them into something else. And it's not, at where I see this as small business owners taking profits out and putting it into things like real estate investments or stock market portfolios or other kinds of asset classes. What is probably smart about that strategy is you're reducing your overall exposure to one particular enterprise as far as riskiness, if you want to bring in portfolio theory to it. But really it's about you and what you want, right? And what you envision for yourself. So are you at the point in your life where you're looking to become more ambitious? Are you looking to do more, to achieve more? And do you want to make those investments based upon some kind of timeline that's going to involve a commitment for you to stick around and work on this plan? Or are you at the point in your life where you want to kind of slow down? A lot of the times when I talk with buyers, they will look at a business that is owned by someone in their late 50s or early 60s, and they'll be critical because they'll see all these different opportunities that seem like, hey, like, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? They could do this, they could do that. And what they're looking at is they're looking at the business owned by a person who probably recognizes some of these things, but prioritizes their free time on the weekend, right? They just have a different set of values based on largely, what their time is worth and what they want to do with their time. I made a video a couple of weeks ago about the changing value of your time. But the point I want to get at today is the investment in growing. And if you're going to grow a business, it really requires a plan. What do I want to achieve? And any good plan is a written plan. And yeah, I'm talking about a business plan, right? So you want to create a business plan going forward into the future. Where do I want to get to? What will I have to do? What investments will have to be made? What are the commitments involved in those investments? So like I gave the example earlier, adding some people to payroll that could later be taken off payroll if your plan doesn't work is sort of one level of commitment. Buying a bunch of machinery or committing to a building or something like that, construction, is on another whole level of magnitude of risk. I was at a gathering a couple of weeks ago, and a guy was talking to me about a piece of machinery that was being custom built for him, and he had to the equipment was being built on a trailer that was going to be pulled behind a truck. And so the company that was custom building the equipment, they were behind schedule in their delivery, but he had kind of committed to them. And the company that was building the trailer delivered on time. But of course, they expected to be paid, right? And he had arranged with a leasing company for a lease on the whole thing together. And this would be natural for a leasing company to want to do, because they wouldn't want to do two separate leases, one on the machine, one on the trailer it sits on, right? Because once these things are attached, you kind of want that one object, that one item to be the security for the lease. And so he had to enter into the lease and start making his monthly lease payment, basically with a trailer that had been delivered to the equipment manufacturer. And it then sat there for a couple of months before the custom equipment was installed on the trailer. And so that's an example of, like, he had to make the commitment to enter into that agreement to start making the monthly payments. And initially that piece of equipment wasn't able to generate any revenue for him at all. So that's a much stickier kind of hurdle for growth. So you want to make a plan. You want to figure out what are the decisions that are sticky that have to be committed to. What are the things that can be backed out of? And this, of course, is going to probably influence how willing you are to get into these things. If it seems overwhelming when you start to think about all these different sort of concepts and ideas that I'm putting forward, it helps to put it all into a tool that can help you visualize things. And you know, what I would recommend is that you head over to bizplanschool.com. And so this is where you can find my cash flow forecasting and business plan writing program. Watch the video there. It explains what I teach through that program. And it's basically a college course in how to build a cash flow forecast for a business from scratch, built entirely on your actual business, rather than plugging in numbers into a template, which may not be properly foreseeing the actual circumstances of your business. And we start from the sales forecast and we work through every little detail until we actually get projected financial statements that could all go into a document that can be presented to a bank or investors or anyone like that. I use 5 different sample companies through the course of the program. And so each week I taught a new thing. I delivered it live in front of a group of live students. They weren't live, but they were doing it concurrently as I was producing each week, to get feedback from those students on how to make the course as good as it could be. But I would teach the lesson and then I would apply the lesson to the 5 different sample companies. So a couple of them were startups, a couple of them were business acquisitions, and there were different businesses that had different kinds of models. So some of them were, selling business to business and having receivables. Others were like a retail store. All different kinds of examples so that I could show you the different circumstances and the different things that have to be accounted for when you're actually looking at a plan going forward in the future. And one of the most important things that you can do when you're creating a growth plan for a business is to model it out and see that it doesn't work, because it's a heck of a lot cheaper to have a business fail in an Excel spreadsheet than it is to actually pursue, the actions and expenses related to doing the plan, only to later see that it doesn't work and it likely would not have ever worked. These are the things you want to work out ahead of time. Anyway, with that, I'll say thank you very much and keep the questions coming. I always love the comments that you guys leave down below because it inspires me to create the next video. And with that, I'll say see you later. We'll talk to you next time.
So, how can you learn more about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses? Easy. Go over to my blog site, davidcbarnett.com, where you can learn more about me and how I work with my clients. You can learn more about my books and courses that I've prepared for you. You can find out how to subscribe to my email list, the YouTube playlists, and more. There's literally hundreds of hours of content there, all for free, and I'd love for you to be my guest. Special thanks go to Mark Willis at Lake Growth Financial, today's video sponsor. Mark helps people better manage their personal and business finances through the Bank on Yourself insurance strategy. This is something I've done personally and I've seen others use it successfully for years. Go to newbankingsolution.com to find all the interviews I've done with Mark and learn more about the advantages of these programs. While there, sign up for a free consultation to learn what this solution might look like for you.